We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley's Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. And I'm excited to welcome the program, Caregiver Dave. Dave, how are you? And like I said, it's nonstop. A couple weeks ago, we did the 10th anniversary of me and the media and radio, and we talked to Duke the Dumpster Drosy, and I was out in Houston last week and had a couple interviews, was kind of a break. Now I'm back, and I don't take a break in the holidays. We keep recording and taping all the way to the new year. So Dave's like, wow, 20th booking? Well, wait, maybe the 23rd? And there's still a couple more days to work this year, Dave.
Yeah.
How about you? What is your thoughts? How many more days do you have to work, Dave? What do you have in your calendar of days working and then days?
Well, in two days I got to hop on a plane and go to Georgia, and then fly from Atlanta to a place called Americus and sit down with the oldest living president in history, President Jimmy Carter. Gonna have some dinner with him and talk and get a photo op with a bunch of people, so I'm excited about that. My wife is not happy that I'm leaving on the 21st and coming back on the 22nd because that's just way too close for Christmas. But I told her, honey, it's the president. I got to get there before he dies because he's 95 years old. He's the oldest living president. But that didn't fly. But I'm doing it anyway.
All right, well, David, that's so I know you're excited.
My president needs me.
Yeah, I'm excited you're going to do that. So go ahead and introduce our guests. Again, Dave is all over the place, as I am as well. Go ahead and introduce our guests.
It's going to be a great show. I don't know if we've ever had two comics on at the same time, because I did a comedy set in New York, and Neil, you're a crazy comedian wrestler, so, I mean, we're going to have fun today. We've got Kendra Cunningham and Katina Carraro.
Correo.
Oh, did I mess that up?
Yeah,
Correo. I knew I was going to mess it up. They're a couple of comics, and that isn't all they do. They're actors, writers, whatever they have to do, they'll do. But they're announcing the release of a double comedy album, Less Bitter, More Glitter, on 800-pound Gorilla Records. Everything's funny about this thing. And it's coming out October 29th.
It already did.
2019. Well, that's in the past. So this already happened.
Hey, but see, Dave's being a comic right now. And that's where Dave is just...
Be careful what you read, right?
Yes.
Well, welcome to the show, guys.
No, it came out 2015. No, or 2014. Just kidding.
Still laughing already.
So newly released. Thanks for calling, guys. And Dave is ready to take us back. But Dave, I guess, you know, you can have those senior moments at times, and there you go. She told us the pronunciation a couple times, but I think it just kind of breaks the ice. We've been breaking the ice off air, so I know it's going to be a fun show.
Absolutely. So laughter is medicine.
Yes, so go ahead and introduce.
We all need medicine.
I was about to say introduce a guest. Go ahead and get the first question.
Kendra Cunningham, tell us the story of how you became an entertainer. That must be a riot.
it's funny. I don't know how funny it is, but I took a one-day comedy writing class at Gotham Writers Workshop here in New York City. And I said, I was just sort of trying to do some different things. I always liked comedy, and I thought I fancied myself a funny person. I was a bartender, you know, and I took the course, and then you had the opportunity to sign up for an 8-week course as a result, and I thought, maybe I'll do it. And then the teacher called me, and I said, oh, my God, this is a sign. he thinks I'm a natural. And he asked me out for a drink. And I said, sorry, I'm not interested, but I will see you in class on Tuesday.
Appeared at Caroline's?
Have I? Yes.
Well, then you've made it. You're the real thing. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. Katina, same question.
No, I was going to ask that, Dave. There you go. So, Dave, that's why I have on my script.
Oh, yeah, I'm stepping on Neil's toes. Go ahead, Neil. Go ahead.
No, I was going to go, Katina, same question. But I'm laughing here because of the fact of the matter is that, you know, comedians and these two great comedians, now, one point in time, they'll get the right acting gig. And then they'll be superstars. That's how it works in the comedy world. You start out on stage, you start doing all these different things, and as a talent, and then the right gig happens for somebody. But go ahead with the same question for you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That's very nice. And every day, every night, I feel like Kendra and I are like, when is that going to happen?
Maybe I need to become your agent then. Okay, go ahead.
yes. Why don't you? I moved to New York to do improv, and I studied at UCB, the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. So I was doing improv in one person shows, more theater-based acting, and then I had some friends who were stand-up comedians, and I just started going to their shows, and then just it kind of evolved into that. But I never really set out to do stand-up, and then once I started doing it and doing the fun shows that come with performing, like having to bring 25 people to a show in order to get a 3 or 4 minute set, because that's what I had to do, like many comedians had to do when we started out. But then I just loved it so much and continued from there.
Wow.
You know, I went and saw a friend of mine do some improv, and there were a bunch of comedians performing, and one of them was gay, and they started doing all these gay jokes. And you got to be real careful, because there's in today's environment, you just don't know what's politically correct to make jokes about. Tell me about that.
Do you want to go, Kendra?
It's up to you.
Okay.
I mean, go.
Anybody.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that I think that if you're, first of all, funny is funny. And I think that if you're being authentic and you're, you know, performing and it's true to you and you think it's funny, I think that, you know, it's comedy, it's entertainment. I think that anything goes with that.
Hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like I don't know, I won't speak for Katina, but I think that it's truly, I mean, neither one of us really talk about, like, politics. We don't have a lot of, like, hot-button subjects or whatever. Most of our stuff is a little bit, like, family, self-reflection, observational comedy, stuff like that. Every once in a while, I might do a joke about something that is a little more controversial, but that's, for the most part, it's not in my repertoire.
Yeah, I think people just need to lighten up more, you know.
See, Dave. I'm going to jump into the comment you made, Dave. Now, it's interesting you say that. It's what is off limits and what is not off limits in comedy. We go back to specifically in the 50s and 40s, where again they were censored in so many ways to what they could say as comedians. And I think Kendra, you look at the history, and Katina, you look at the history, and that's the hardest part, right? What is offending somebody, or what is really trying to be what the people before you set off to, so that there would not be censoring of comedians.
I missed
the censoring.
I kind of
the
don't
censoring.
Understand. So
the censoring, you know, like back in the 40s and 50s in comedy, where certain things were not or taboo, weren't allowed to be said, different things like that. What is that drawing that line? Just kind of looking at you guys talked about it, but what are your thoughts historically on that?
I just go back to the, you know, if it's funny and if it's bringing, you know, sometimes people want to laugh at things that are hard to laugh at. I mean, you know, but if whoever is telling the joke, like, I think that what Kendra was saying is, like, we are being ourselves and we are positive people. And So our comedy reflects that. And I think that if I went on stage and I was just only talking politics or only talking hot button issues, that's not really something that is my style. So I don't know if I'm the... I don't know. I think that if it's funny and I find, you know, and I can present it in a funny way, then I think it works. But I think if I just went up there and started talking about something because I wanted to get a reaction and I didn't believe it, but it was like, yeah, then I feel like it's not working as much.
Yeah, whenever you can talk about what people are already thinking but maybe are afraid or ashamed to say it, that's where you get the laugh as well, you know. And then Neil's talking about history, you know, the insult comics, you know, the Don Rickles and the Phyllis Dillers and the who's
Richard,
the other
one? Richard like Pryor,
Diller,
Eddie Murphy.
Died recently.
Different types of comics that got certain hot button reactions from Red Skelton all the way in history of comics. That's the thing that, because I remember watching the history of comedy on CNN. That's where the power of comedy. Go ahead, Dave, with your next question.
Yeah.
So, Kendra, when did you know that this was your passion? Obviously, I'm assuming it's your passion because it sure sounds like it.
I think probably, I would say it took me a while. Maybe like I was doing it for like 5 or 6 years before I started to feel like that I was going to stick with it. You know, for I feel like for the first 5 or 6 years, I was sort of just dabbling and I was like, what am I doing? I don't really understand, you know, how this whole thing works. And then I got into the Boston Comedy Festival and people started asking me to be on shows. Like Katina, I spent a lot of time doing what they call bringer shows, where you have to bring so many people in order to get on stage. And then people started like booking me just on bar shows, you know, like nothing major. Then I started producing a show with somebody and it just sort of snowballed from there. And I think I really enjoy the writing and, you know, I have my master's in psychology. I think there's probably some sort of psychological thing behind it where I like to make people feel good, you know.
So were you the class clown as a kid? I mean, were you making people laugh even, you know, at 12 years old and 15 years old and you write your own material?
I was not. I don't know about you. I have a funny feeling Katina might have been.
I think I thought I was.
So that's why
I was like, oh, those characters are amazing. I have to try them out on everyone. I was actually shy as a child, and all I wanted to do was play sports. I wanted to play field hockey and softball, and because sports were very, very big at my school. And I just remember like, oh, like it's so cool to do that. And in high school, I got cut from every single thing, cheerleading, softball. I was the boys' baseball manager. They didn't need me anymore. And then the only thing left to do was the play. And then I got the lead in the play. So I thought, okay, well then I guess this is where I'm supposed to be. And then that's where my performing, you know, where I got the little urge to perform all the time because of that.
You know what? You know what's interesting when you're talking about that, and that's a great point, is that once you figure out your passion, that's why I wanted that question, is kind of like when the light bulb goes on, this is what I want to do. Regardless if it's not going to make me millions of dollars, it's something that makes me passionate. Katina, when did that light bulb come on for you?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think it really was when I finished college and I went to a theater training program in San Francisco, ACT. And afterwards, then I just moved to New York and I knew that I wanted to
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Give this a shot. But when you make that realization that it's really the only thing that makes you happy, you have to just abandon that. I'm going to just do this for money. It's almost like your drive to perform is so much greater than going down that 9-to-5 path or making money or, you know, anything. It's like you'll just do anything to perform for the 5 minutes of stage time. And it's like, I mean,
yes,
I think it's just that, like, passion takes over, and you find yourself. That's why most actors, if they have to temp or they have to do other jobs. I mean, I was miserable at any other job that I would do. You know, if I was temping in an office, people knew that I didn't want to be there. So I think it's like, I think that drive to do it motivates you, and it's hard to imagine that something can motivate you more than money and saving for your future, but it does.
I was gonna say, sorry about that.
Continue.
Go.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, and that's, you know, then eventually it catches up with you, and you look back and you say, thank God I did that. You know, thank God I did follow my passion.
See, that's a great point.
You know, comedian is only as good as the writer who's writing the material. So you write your own material. Where do you get this stuff from?
I do, yes. I think, like what Kendra was saying, we really take experiences and instances from our life. A lot of that is the things that bum us out. You know, for me, it's like the auditions that I didn't book. It's the things that you don't get, the things that, you know, trying to make a laugh or something funny out of things that don't go well, which fortunately for me was a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, and like most actors, you know, you're not going to get every job you audition for. You're not going to get everything you set out to do. And I think that comedians are unique in a way that we can take these instances and occurrences that happen to our life and make them fun. And the audience can relate to that because, you know, we all have experiences like that.
Yeah. Well, there's obviously some chemistry between you two. How did you guys connect? Kendra, you.
I'm trying to think of when we originally met. A couple, you know, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But, I was always a huge fan of Katina's. And I think she would agree with you on that. And I always was drawn to her energy and her sense of humor. She's very funny and just has a great personality. And I just remember I used to try to get her to gossip with me. You know, I'd be like, did you see so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. And she would never engage with me. on talking crap about people, and I was like, I got to get this girl to gossip.
You should see me now.
And still to this day, I'm always the one shooting my mouth off, and every once in a while she'll say something, and I'm like, yeah, I changed her.
So you corrupted her. That's good.
I corrupted her, yes.
So we did a video
together about 2 years ago that we submitted to the Woman in Comedy Festival that did not make it, but we had so much fun, and we were like, we got to do more stuff together.
Hang on to that video. It might come in handy one day.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have to say, I'm so appreciative to hear Kendra say that, because I felt the exact same way. So it's always nice to know that the people that you look up to and just admire feel that way. But Kendra is she's just hilarious on stage and such a wonderful performer, but also a good, cool person that you want to hang out with. And I always say I would hang out with her even if we weren't comedians, but I'm so glad we are, that we can share this experience together. and it's great. And I think we really balance each other because we do have similar outlooks, but we have different takes on them too. So that makes us a little unique in that sense, but we just mesh very well together.
Well, I can tell you guys.
Yeah, were you going to ask how they got this album?
Yeah, I'm going to go with, before that, I wanted to kind of, Katina, your impression of Kendra when you first met her, when she came to you, because again, that's the kind of the relationship where you said, you know what, I really want to work with her. When did that kind of, that relationship start working together to say that, yeah.
Oh, well, my first impression was like, oh my gosh, I have to be friends with this person, which I'm sure is very scary to the person on the other end. But I just knew after seeing her perform, there was a show that we did together, and I saw her perform, and she made me like genuinely laugh. And that's, you know, we see comedy sometimes 3 or 4 shows a night, and you're not like hysterically laughing all the time. And she just stood out, and everyone has a good word to say about Kendra. Everyone loves her. So she's just smart and dedicated. And I knew that if we were going to do this, that she would be the person. And then like she said, after that sketch, we just had such a funny rapport with each other that we thought this has legs. We can do something with this.
Okay. Wow.
All right. So let's go to that question that Dave just asked about your latest project. Tell us about it, Kendra.
Yeah. So how did the album happen? I don't even know if they call them albums anymore.
So we had this idea. We wanted to do an album that was some kind of like audio of sketches. So her and I would do some comedic sketches that could translate just audibly. You wouldn't need to actually see the video.
Yeah.
So we were going to do like these sort of like little vignettes of conversational comedy, and then incorporate and then edit in jokes. And we had this whole grand scheme of what we were going to do. We tried it out on stage in Brooklyn, and it didn't quite work. So we ended up doing just a very, you know, a standard live show recording with the 800-pound gorilla. We did it at the Valley Forge Casino in Pennsylvania. It was packed, sold out. We had a blast. We got dressed up. And, I think it turned out really well. We were just happy to, even though our vision didn't come to life, it was a nice collaborative project, and now we'll do some other stuff with our other ideas.
Do you ever get to LA performing?
We've both gone individually, but we haven't taken this show there. But it is a goal for the 2020. We have a.
Well, let me know. I want to be there.
Oh,
all right. We'll let you know for sure. Probably the end of 2020. We're trying to make our way across the country.
Yes, okay. We have Boston we're going to be doing. We're in Massachusetts, Pennsylvania. So definitely making our way there. We would love to do that. And we have so many of our friends there. And I think that would be a nice maybe to close out our tour. That sounds like a nice thing to do.
Well, now you have this friend there as well.
Yes. Oh, thank you.
Now, thank you so much.
That's what's so nice about interviewing people and to make that connection, Katina. And so where do you guys see this going? Where do you want this to go? What is the goal, especially as a tandem, as a comedy tandem? There's not a lot of them left. So what do you see you guys going together, where it wants to go? Yeah.
Well, I think one of the beautiful thing about what we do is individually we both have solid acts, solid careers. You know, we are independently comedians and actors, and we do that.
That's
with
great.
This project, what's been so great is that we have come together and taken all the great that's happened from our acting and our comedy and just put it together to support one another and to make it even greater. So we want to do more sketches together. We want to do more shows where I can do my comedy, Kendra can do her comedy, and then in between we do sets together. And so these are the things that we're working on. One of the things that I believe stands out as part of our album is that we call it Less Bitter, More Glitter, because we really do try to bring a touch of old-fashioned comedy to this, where it's just good-natured, good humor. Everyone's going to have a great time. And it's not political. It's kind of an escape from everyday life. And people are really, really on board with that idea. I mean, when we do a show, and the people who tell us that make us want to continue to do this, because people are like, I love that. I escaped. I just was happy. I was laughing. I could relate. And we just want more of that. The live shows are just magical.
So the old fashioned comedy team, you know, one guy was always the straight man. The other one got the joke. How's it working, you guys? I haven't seen your act yet.
I don't know, Castro. What do you think? I don't know. I mean,
well,
I
made you laugh. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
I guess if we had to pick, I guess I would be the straight one, I guess. But I feel like we're both pretty silly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I guess, yeah, I think so.
You know what? I think that's true. I think we really do take turns. And I've been in working with other people too, and there is a definite straight person, silly person. But I agree with Kendra. I think there are we kind of, wherever it, you know, whoever seems to be right for this particular thing, we do it. And maybe that's because we're doing a lot of sketch work. But I guess it's something we just have to, you have to see live to get us. No.
Yeah. You know, like I'm thinking of Burns and Allen, you know, everyone used to say, well, if it wasn't for Gracie, George Burns wouldn't have a career, you know.
Right.
But you two are, comedians in your own right.
Awesome. Well, you know what?
Yeah, exactly.
The last question Dave always has, and it's involving his life. He talked about speaking across the country and comedy and, you know, and traveling and meeting living presidents. Hopefully not dead presidents yet, Dave. So go ahead, Dave. That'd be nice. But if you were meeting dead presidents, you wouldn't be on the show right now, because you would be dead. So go ahead, Dave, with your question for our two guests about caregiving.
Yes, and I don't mean to bring anything down here, but a few years ago, actually 23 years ago, my wife had a headache, turned into a stroke, lost her speech, became paralyzed. And, you know, the last thing that we wanted to do, because we went through a 3-year grief period, was to let ruin our lives, because we loved each other. We had a fairy tale, storybook, romance, courtship, and marriage. And so it took us a few years, maybe 2 or 3 years, to get a handle on this. But now we've recovered. We reinvented ourselves. We've reignited our love. And we're funny. I mean, we make fun of each other we love each other, and so now I want to help other caregivers who are struggling, who are actually 30% of them die before their loved ones do because it's such a stressful job, to help them stay alive. And that's my message. And And wow. Some of the titles of my talks have been, caregivers need to be selfish in order to survive. Put your needs first. Put your oxygen mask on first. So we travel the country. I've been on like 29 TV shows.
Oh, wow.
I've been at Harvard, NASDAQ, Carnegie Hall, share the stage with Suzanne Summers, Martha Stewart, Ice-T. And that's just my mission in life. So I always like to say, if you're not a caregiver yet, just wait. You're either going to become one or you're going to need one. So my question to you, funny guys, is has caregiving touched your life?
Wow, that's amazing, by the way.
Grandparents, parents.
Yeah, in some way, yes. I mean, when my dad was sick, I would say for the past,
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Last couple of months, I joined my mom and my sister in caregiving, and it is a very trying time, and it's really, really hard to explain to anyone else because everyone else is living their life, and you just you're having these experiences that are just out of this world. Like, you just can't even imagine that, like, you're just going through the motions at times. So it is important in that time to just stop and reflect upon that. But I don't know.
Comedians make the best caregivers because you've got to stay light. You've got to stay positive, you know. Look for the funny in things. Because if you don't laugh, you're going to cry.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a website, caregiverdave.com, and it's just packed with resources and funny anecdotes and videos and blogs and articles. And there's actually a membership. You join, one-time, lifetime membership fee, and caregivers are going to make it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Well, I appreciate – where's the guys? Can we find information on you and purchase the album, learn about your schedules and all that stuff? Do you have individual sites and then also a site to purchase the album?
We don't have a site put up. We should, I guess. But we have our individual sites, you know, KendraCunningham.com and KatinaCorreo.com. KatinaCorreo.com. Is it KatinaCorreo.com, right, Katina?
Yes, KatinaCorreo.com and then KendraCunningham.com. And on both our sites, we have information about the album. It's Less Bitter, More Glitter. And we really, really appreciate you've taken the time to chat with us.
You need to go to GoDaddy and see if KendraandKatina.com is available and get it. If not, do it the other way around.
Or your album.
It's Less Bitter, More Glitter. It's on every streaming site on iTunes and Amazon and blah blah blah, and we're both on Instagram. I'm at the Ava Kendra. I don't know.
Yes, and I'm at Katina Correo and on Twitter. So please follow me because I lost my Twitter account a couple of 2 years ago. So I have like 3 followers now. No, not 3, but.
Do you want it back or no?
I do have a Twitter account now, but it's a little, I'm getting it back in there.
No, the old one, because you can get the old one back if you really, really want it.
I wish I could. Yes, I would love to get it back. Yep. We'll have to chat about that.
I helped Dave get his back, right, Dave?
Yeah, I lost mine, and I got it back, too.
Yeah, thanks
You're
to me.
You're kidding.
Thanks
right,
to me, because
it was hard. I almost gave up, but I just kept hitting it, And eventually you'll get talking to somebody, and they gave it back to me.
I told Dave to not give up, right? And I took you through the steps.
That's right. I listened to Neil. Neil is a Twitter guy. If anybody can get it back, Neil can.
I have over 72,000 followers on Twitter.
Neil is a social media guy.
Yeah, but both of my accounts combined, and I understand Twitter, all social media stuff. NeilHaley.com. I never promote myself. Isn't that funny? I guess because I love to promote my guests and my hosts.
No, he's a guy.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate
he's
that, Dave. No, you. Just contact me off air. You have the publicist, and I'll help you with your Twitter, get your old Twitter back. That'll be simple.
Anyways. Oh, you're amazing. Thank you.
Because nobody wants to start over again. That's a bummer.
Oh, it's the worst. I know.
So my phone number is online, by the way, as well. So you can just text me. So everybody can text me if they want. Anyone that wants business, I'm here for you.
Right.
I appreciate
it. Yeah, nice
it was a
fun. You guys, you made us laugh.
You made me laugh, and you guys
Thank
are
you
awesome.
Thank you so much for having us, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, and
you
best of luck. And I know you guys are going to. I just see this as a different niche type of comedy. I look forward to continued success for you guys, and thanks for calling.
You're on YouTube, right?
We can check you out.
We're around there.
I'm
going to go right there and make me laugh. Okay.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
You'll listen to Neil Haley's show when we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley's Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. Welcome to the program. Caregiver Dave. Dave, how are you? And Dave, again, you're counting down. You talk about your wife and how the Christmas season's a gigantic season for you, isn't it? She's so into it, isn't she?
Yeah, it is. She's you heard of Father Christmas? She's Mother Christmas. She's got this place decorated right after Halloween.
All right. Well, awesome. Go ahead and introduce our guest. I'm interested in talking. I think because you lived in New York for years, this book will really, really interest you, Dave. So go ahead and introduce our guest.
Yeah, I love the title. So we've got an author, Skip Rosen, and he just wrote a book, The View from Apartment 4, on loving and leaving New York. What a great title. Welcome to the show, Skip.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us about your journey. I mean, how did you become a writer?
Oh, golly. You got that much time?
We do have enough time. We've got time. Plenty of time.
I started when I was in college. I was looking for some activity that would be good for me. I had a relatively quiet life in high school, and I decided I would. I didn't know much about sports. Football looked like it was an easy way to get involved. I went to the University of Miami. I went to the freshman coach. I told him I wanted to play football. He looked at my 5'10½, 140-pound frame, and he said, maybe you might like to be a cheerleader. And I said, no, that wasn't good for me. So he suggested the college newspaper. So I walked into the college newspaper, and it was something I really decided I loved. I ended up on the Miami Herald, and that was the beginning.
Wow.
So you left New York pretty early, like in college, huh?
No. I got to New York in, I got out of, back from Europe, out of the army and into New York in 1965. And I was there until 1991. And it was in 1991, my wife and I, we had a delightful daughter, and we wanted a second child, and our second child became triplets, and our wonderful
two-bedroom
apartment became obsolete, and we ended up on Cape Cod.
Okay.
Wow. Were you born in New York and raised in school and everything, or no?
I was born in Cincinnati.
I see. So you were a New York transplant.
I got out of the army in 64, and I was looking for a place to go. I'd been a writer for the Herald while I was in school, and done some freelance writing when I was in Europe and in the army.
Was it Department 4 in Manhattan or Brooklyn or the Bronx? Where was it?
Upper West Side of New York, Manhattan.
Okay, nice area.
All right, I'm going to take him back.
It was
real
a great
quick.
Area.
For sure. We'll get to that. We'll get to that with the book. I just wanted to kind of go really quickly into when you talked about writing and first job in writing, that experience. What did you gain from that?
It was a wonderful experience for me because on a newspaper, you get to do all kinds of writing. And you start off as many young newspaper reporters do. You start off writing obituaries, and you transfer to writing daily news, traffic accidents, fires, explosions, feature writing. And it gave me a picture of what life was like in a very, very visceral way. And I decided that I would like to do that if I could for a living. I was naive. I thought it was something I did it as a young man. Why couldn't I do it for a living? I had no idea how complicated and difficult it was going to be, but that was the beginning of it.
Dave, that's this interesting thing that I've done as an interviewer in 10 years, just like he has done as a writer, is I've talked in about a variety of topics and subjects, and I've interviewed people in a variety of categories. And every time I get to interview somebody in a new niche subject matter, I learn more and more. And then if you continue to delve into that topic subject matter, you kind of sort of become an expert in certain ways, Dave. And it sounds like what he did in his experience, his first job writing, is he got to try everything so he could really understand the world in so many ways.
But what you just described is exactly what the experience of being a writer is like. You, especially for nonfiction, for magazines and newspapers, you get an assignment on a subject you know nothing about, and you have to become an instant expert.
Yes.
And in that process, you get a real sense of what that is like, and you become passionate about it. Then that story's over and you move on to the next assignment. And the same process gets repeated over and over again.
And what's crazy with me doing
so out of all of those variety of topics, what's your favorite subject that you have written about or that you love to write about?
That's a very interesting question, because if you look at the bulk of my writing, it's about sports and sports personalities and sports events and drugs in sports and gambling in sports and business in sports. And the truth is that that's not my favorite subject. I just, once you write about something in this business of ours, you become an instant expert, and people say, well, you know, you wrote this, try this one. And but what I really like is the broad variety of different subjects in different places. I've traveled in Greenland. I've traveled in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I've traveled to South America about different people living in different situations under different conditions. And that, to me, is the great joy of being a writer.
Wow. Yeah, I can hear it.
It's a definite joy that it seems like, for sure. And that's the thing that you do, is then you learn more things and come up with better ideas and say, okay, I'm going to try this. And then once you get a good enough writer, then you get to choose what you want to write about at times, right? Because then you freelance or try to get other writing deals, and you write these articles based on things you really want to write about.
And it becomes just as you're describing, it becomes a path to a broader range of experience, and that gains you a certain amount of credibility, and they let you write about it because they think you're good enough to do it.
Absolutely.
What these people want is for you to produce something on paper that is good enough to draw readers in. And once they're convinced that you can do that, they'll let you do it.
Great point. All right, Dave, next question.
Well, let's talk about your latest book. Tell us about it.
I had the same apartment on the Upper West Side for 46 years. And it was a small one-bedroom apartment, and it was rent-controlled. And for people who don't know what rent control is, it's a law that exists in several cities that came about mostly during World War II to stabilize living conditions so that landlords couldn't rent gouge. And it still exists in many cities, including New York. So I had the same apartment for 46 years, starting at an incredible rent of $76 a month. And then by the time we're talking about the 90s, the rent was up to $330 a month.
Wow.
Insane. But I could keep that.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyberstation USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archived CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The cyberstation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is cyberstationusa.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Apartment, and I could keep that apartment as a struggling writer because living conditions are relatively expensive in New York City, and an apartment is probably the most expensive thing. So living that cheaply, it was something I could hang on to, and I had a landlord who was generous, who liked me, and didn't give me any pressure, as many people in rent-controlled apartments get pressure from landlords to move.
Yeah. I feel sorry for the landlord who,
exactly. He sold the building. The new landlord was not so generous, and I got evicted. And there I was in 2012, having had this apartment for all this time, suddenly evicted, and it was a very traumatic experience for me. And I wrote an essay about it. And then the essay got complicated because all those events that happened that I saw from that apartment over all those years, it became a very complicated story, and it ended up turning it into a book.
It sounds,
that's what the book is about.
So it sounds like Skip,
that period.
Yeah, right. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, Skip, it sounds like to me that you would have kept in that, stayed in that apartment the rest of your life if you weren't kind of forced out.
Well, I don't think he could have with three kids, no?
I couldn't have, but that was the legal issue because we had moved to the Cape, and I would have loved to have hung under the apartment because I was in and out of the city all the time.
Yeah, it's a great place.
But he had the legal right to evict me because it was no longer my primary residence.
How much do you think the rent goes for today?
I know exactly what it goes. I know,
you know exactly.
Because I got a letter from the Rent Control Commission telling me that my apartment, which, as I said, $330 a month, was now renting for close to $3,000 a month.
Wow.
This is a one-bedroom apartment with no air conditioning, no elevator. It was in a brownstone, like a walk-up. And
no air conditioning, no elevator.
Exactly.
But it was perfect for you as a writer, even if you were going to have another home, just to kind of live that New York lifestyle. Kind of explain that to us. Like, as a writer, how you use New York a lot of ways to give you inspiration as a writer.
It's a wonderful city to live in for many, many reasons, but particularly good for a writer because there are so many different environments. You can go from the Upper West Side, which was at that point when I lived there primarily residential, and you could go to Park Avenue, you could go to Lincoln Center, and these are all environments that you can write about, and I wrote about many of them. I spent a lot of time, I wrote for Audubon Magazine, and I went to the Cloisters and wrote about Fort Tryon Park. I worked as a news reporter for Time Magazine and, covered different assignments of activities that took place during the power failures where there were rent strikes, there were garbage strikes, there were different issues, and all this
blackouts,
all these things taking place. And if you happen to be writing about sports, and my first nonfiction book was about sports, you have all these teams that are coming into New York for activities, for games, all of it based in New York. It's an incredibly vibrant environment in which to function for a writer.
Yes. Dave,
fun.
What about for you, the inspiration?
Yeah, are you planning on writing any more books, or is this your Citizen Kane that you're going to retire on?
I don't think I could stop writing. It's an activity. It's the only thing professionally I've ever done that gives me satisfaction and pleasure. I spent many of the years writing, in addition to my nonfiction books, which were published, I wrote novels, none of which were published, and I gave it up at a certain point out of a source of frustration. But I miss it, and I'm back to writing novels, and that's what I'm working on now.
Do you mind if I ask how old you are?
I am 77 years old.
Wow. I saw your interview. You look pretty good for 77 years old.
Thank you. It was my niece who took the picture, and I think she took some liberties with it.
No, but he's talking about he's watched you on television with some of your TV interviews. Skip.
Yeah.
I spent 3 years working for ESPN.
Oh, wow.
And there were a lot of interviews there. And I've done some interviews because of the book.
So you work for ESPN. So tell me a little, couple of stories of that. So what was your job at ESPN?
This was a period when they were creating their Sports Century series, starting in 1997 right up to 2000. And it was a fascinating event. They created a small ESPN is based in Bristol, which is kind of in the middle of Connecticut. They created a satellite office near I-95, and we wrote about, we created documentaries about the century in sports, and it was fascinating work. I had not worked in television before, and I got into it primarily as a researcher, but I was fortunate enough, they gave me the opportunity to write some production, do some production work, write some scripts. We turned out some documentaries, which were, I thought, very informative. And it was a great experience for me because most of the people there were much younger than I was. And there were a major element, characteristic of the series was putting these sports events in historical context. And there were all of the shows. There were some short ones. There were just a minute long, and there were others that were 90 minutes long. And there were 30-minute shows on the 50 best athletes of the century. And all of these different small documentaries and large documentaries relied on a lot of historical context, the things that were happening at that particular time. And because most of the people I was working with were much younger than I was. They had read about these things, but they had not lived through them. And it was a great opportunity for me to bring context to these different shows. I loved it. It was television requires a way of working that is a little quick and abrupt for me, because I like sitting with a paragraph and a page and working it and reworking it until I feel I've got it right. And there's not much time for that in television. And it's not a subtle medium either, in my view.
Yeah. How's the book doing?
I think it's doing pretty well. The reviews have been very good.
Good.
That's
well, I'm so happy for you.
Yes. Yeah, so kind of looking at writing sports all the time, your next books are not going to be about sports then. Am I correct, Skip?
You're absolutely correct.
Can you tell us kind of where you're going next?
I'm working on a novel about the title is called Obituary Man, and it's about this New Yorker in his 70s who's obsessed with death. And that's really what the book is about. And it's evolving in my mind. If I knew more, I would tell you. I'm not keeping any secrets.
That's great. You know, that's
not about you, right?
Maybe.
Now, it's interesting you talk about Obituary Man and all that. So that kind of goes back to some of your life. You probably had to write some, and write some of those columns that come out and stuff like that. And how about young people today, Skip, and how their preparation for death now? There's a website I interviewed two lovely ladies about this website they created it's all about planning for death. What is your thought, you know, from the days of, you know, working in newspapers to today about how people honor people when they die?
You really bring up a very interesting point, because obituary writing in the past was very different. First of all, there were many, many more newspapers, and the attitude toward obituaries were that it was just as you describe. It is honoring the lives of these individuals, and newspapers took this all very seriously. And if you look at it today, newspapers, most obituaries, well, certainly when celebrities die, they get a lot of attention, but most obituaries for people, local people, the newspapers don't cover them at all. They're paid obituaries. The family pays for them. They write them themselves. And there's no journalistic legitimacy to these stories. They're just what the family wants. And I think that's a shame. It's a part of society that I believe has lost its way. And we had an opportunity. Every newspaper would look at its local population, and when someone died, they would take that life experience and make that the feature of the focus of the story. and it said a lot about the culture and the society, and it's something that I think we've lost.
Yeah, it's a shame. We've lost a lot of things.
And that's the challenge of planning for death and things like that. My father passed away a couple months ago, and looking at honoring people's lives and things like that. But it's interesting to see how millennials are trying to do it. So it's a good commentary to look at. But when you don't have newspapers, how are you going to honor them? And that's where all these different ideas are coming. And that's why, again, Skip is looking at writing and other different aspects in his life now than the days of all these newspapers, which is an absolute shame to see them go. But online reading is going to be interesting to see where that goes. And will we ever see a comeback in newspapers? Do you think, Skip, it's going to happen? Online newspapers are going to be successful, or you think it's going to...
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio. The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.